Welcome to America's new favorite game show. Who wants the literal blood-soaked symbol of American imperialism?
Awooga! You should post that on Grabon.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good. You should post it on Grabon.
What the hell is Grabon?
Grabon these nuts!
Welcome to America's Widows, a very professional podcast.
Welcome to We're America's Widows, our podcast about Winter and the Soldier Falcon. Here with us today is Caitlin Smith.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about the episode. hit like if you like that, you filthy fucking animals.
Oh my god.
What do we think of the episode?
Good.
Very good.
So, I had many thoughts about the episode, lots and lots of different ones that are quite in-depth, yes. But I want to start with my most frequent thought that I had most often throughout the episode. Seb Stan is very pretty.
Seb Stan is very pretty. I don't know if I've ever said this before.
Oh no, why did you start with that? Now I won't be able to... My brain's going to be offline for the next 15 minutes.
The diversity of fan service this show gives us. Like, last episode, Bucky was crying. This episode, he was happy. It's everything a fan could ever want.
What more could he possibly want from art? That's incredible.
I mean, aside from the fact that this episode's amazing in general, like, you know, this reminds me of that meme, like, must art be good? Is it not enough to just sit in a dark room and stare at Bucky Barnes?
Is it not enough that Elaine from Seinfeld is in this show now?
Wait, really?
Yeah, she's the Countess Vavavava. She's the Countess Vavavava.
Oh, yes, the Val?
Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, played by Julia Louise Dreyfus. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. And, Julia's, okay. Like, a very reputable comedic actress. She's known for playing Elaine in Seinfeld.
To structure this conversation slightly, since you brought up Sebastian Stan, Caitlin, thereby ruining my life forever, do you want to talk about Bucky?
Was it
a bit?
Not already ruined?
Oh,
jeez! God.
I'm a professional.
You sure are a professional. I love how this podcast is you skating between like talking like a master's student and it's just making little noises.
Yeah, let's talk about Bucky for a bit. Why don't we? So, what do we think of our child?
He sure is trying to hit on Sam's sister.
Successfully hitting on Sam's sister.
Successfully hitting on Sam's sister. I was delighted by that turn of events.
Mm. Yes. Sam's sister agrees.
Hell yeah. Don't blame her. No. Yeah, it seems like they're really pulling it together. There's a scene in this where, like, Bucky goes down into the ship and, like, they don't even say hi. Sam's just like, hold that, and he does it. And, like, it just shows that, like, apart from having become friends or whatever, they've become really comfortable around one another and, like, you know, like, they're bros. And, like, it's just a... It's a scene that does not advance any kind of plot at all, and I fucking love it. And I know that some people are not going to like it, and those people can go to hell.
It actually gets that they're friends. Unlike sort of the awkward, weird buddy cop whatever they were doing earlier on, this is like, they're just good friends. They're trying to deny it, but they are really good friends, and they like each other. They like
they
each
sure
other
do.
A lot.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, like, I think this really redeems all the weird buddy cop stuff, because, like, I think it sort of recontextualizes it as the two of them really not knowing how to exist in relation to one another, and finally figuring out that, like, they can just exist in each other's space, and they don't have to be, like, bantery and superhero bro team.
Yeah.
That meant a lot to me. I was really, really into that. And seeing Bucky happy, though.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
But also, like, Bucky, I mean, you guys said way earlier on, Bucky's kind of that sort of casually racist, just typical white guy casual racism. And yes. He apologizes for it. He realizes.
He does. Yeah.
You know, growth. Expecting a black guy to take the shield and not have any doubts or complicated thoughts about it is just a bit oblivious. And he's like, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I am an idiot. Yeah. I love
it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's really good. Wonderful. And you would not typically see this at all because, like, there was no moment of, like, Bucky making a big, obvious mistake. So, like, that means that in most shows, Bucky would not have a beat where he apologizes because most shows would not understand that he has something to apologize for or that he made a misstep.
Yes.
I think this would come off a little bit better if there was, if he felt like he was in that particular scene in Endgame. But I think a lot of things would be better if Endgame was a bit better, so whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
I really like
how he also implicates Steve in his apology, because obviously Steve is not there to apologize for himself. And, like, it's not like Bucky is apologizing for him, but he acknowledges that what Steve did was also a really, like, shitty thing to do. And I also appreciate the mild retcon in Bucky being like, when Steve told me what he was gonna do. And I'm like, no, he didn't.
He did not.
Nobody had any regard for your feelings, Bucky.
Steve did not tell you. Steve broke your heart.
I love the general thing of, like, gently retconning bad choices. Like, one of the things that I was so stoked for when I saw that the Russos were going to get more movies in the MCU, and, you know, they let us down, they let us all down, but what I was stoked for was, like, some sort of gentle retcon of the whole Bruce and Tasha situation, where they would, where they would have Nat have some throwaway line, like, oh, I've been seeing some guy from da-da-da trying to forget about it all and then just never address it again.
Yes. Yeah, and instead we get this, which is much more satisfying, IMO.
Yes, yes.
When Steve and I discussed this...
you liar. Or, you know, retcon. Whichever one.
Yeah. Going back, making the story okay.
Yeah, but I'm really looking forward to, you know, that next episode. It's pretty clear we're going to have Bucky going and telling the old guy that he killed his son. And that's going to break my heart, and I am so ready for it.
That's
going to
be wild.
I can't do this.
That's going to be brutal.
I love that character journey of Bucky's is going to be really subtle. Like, because he was about to go do it anyway, and so it's, you know, one step over the threshold. But it is about what Sam said. It's about why he's going to go and apologize and make amends. He's not doing it to feel better or because his therapist thinks he should or whatever. He's doing it because, you know, that guy deserves to know what happened to his son, even if he gets really pissed off at Bucky for it, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
That's just... I like that sort of... I know they've been confident enough to go with quite a subtle character arc for Bucky that is still really significant.
Yeah, and like we were saying way back in the first episode, that sort of the question that all of that raises is, how do you make amends for something like that? And the answer is that you can't.
Yeah.
But you still gotta go have that conversation when you're in that kind of situation.
Yeah. And you've got to do it for the other person.
You gotta do it for the other person.
Exactly. I love the distinction Sam makes as well between amending and avenging. And I also love how that calls back to the whole superhero thing. Like, the idea that you are someone special and you can fix the mistakes of the world and you're, like, powerful, right? And that's not what you need to do when you're in a situation like this. And, like, the idea that the thing that Bucky really needs to do is just be a person and just, like, exist as a person in the world. And we get to see him doing this for literally the first time since he's ever been on screen ever.
Yeah, like, pretty much. Like, even when he's just hanging out with Steve at the very start of First Avenger, he's in his uniform, you know?
True.
Yeah.
But he does get to date Jenna Coleman.
Oh, that's true. But, like, he's not, like, performing humanness in this episode. Like, he is in the beginning of the show, where he's, like, trying to be a person but not really, like, you know, succeeding at it. And in this one, he's, like, sleeping on Sam's couch and flirting with Sam's sister and helping him fix a boat. And it's, like, it's just very mundane and beautiful.
I love that about this episode. It's just that it kind of like lets the vibe sit, and it has a lot of the little like mundane but like the kind of relaxing vibe, and it's just about like the atmosphere of it rather than like urgently driving the plot forward and forward and forward, and like that is just unusual in this context, and I think the shows are proving more interesting for it, that it has more scope for that kind of thing that the movies haven't allowed themselves at all, even though they absolutely could, they just don't.
Yeah,
absolutely. And one final detail about this thing is the line where Bucky says, "I don't always think about it," referring to his metal arm, "I'm right-handed." Yeah. And I'm just like, first of all, that's very funny. But it's also just like, I don't know, it made me feel a feeling. And it also was very like, in the context of him just learning to exist in a mundane way and like help out in a way that's small and be friends with someone and be in a community, it's like the idea that he's a whole person, you know?
Yes.
And like, he might have a superpower metal arm.
He's not just thinking of himself as the Winter Soldier anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like, he might have a superpowered metal arm that is literally a weapon welded to his body, but he's like right-handed.
Yeah, yeah. And that he's Bucky Barnes first.
Yeah.
You okay there? Sorry.
No.
Did I wound you? Jeez.
I'm sorry. This is a long journey for me.
Since we're talking about the arm, I think it could be worth briefly talking about the arm discourse that sprung up over the last week, because this show has been trying to provoke fucking think pieces and discourse and etc. And the only thing that's really taken root on social media is a small bit of business in the middle of a fight scene where Ayo pops off Bucky's arm as a defensive measure, and it's symbolically loaded because the arm was made in Wakanda, and she picks up the arm, she picks up the shield, which was also made in Wakanda, and then, like, having made her point, she returns both to them. This kind of... There were arguments on the internet about whether this was a very cruel thing for Ayo to do, whether it's racist to say that, whether it was ableist of her to do, to pop off a disabled dude's prosthetic, and so forth.
I think this discourse falls into the category of most discourse that's been on the internet, and especially all discourse I've seen in the last week, which is people need to learn about Nuance Core.
Uh-huh. People do need to learn about Nuance Core. Shout out to our good pal Audrey, who invented Nuance.
It's a thing. It's complicated. The world doesn't make sense. The world isn't a clear line of what is everything. It depends on your perspective. And, I mean, you can tell the show's very much going to go, you know, this is Wakandan, that they have a sort of a sovereign right to it, that they have to the shield, which was literally made of stolen vibranium. And as I say in this episode, the legal status of the shield is a bit iffy.
Yes.
Not least because it doesn't really belong to anyone American. So, I mean, that was what I took from it. And I was like, oh, cool, Bucky's arm can come off. Unlike the other one that had to be blasted off with much pain.
I've been on record saying that the idea that his arm is detachable is not a bad thing, and that just personally speaking, if I had to have a prosthetic metal arm fitted, I would really like it to be detachable. I don't really feel like having one welded to the inside of my body.
Understandable.
That's not
have
really.
Have a nice day.
That's neither here nor there.
Turns out Wakanda is not as bad as Hydra, or not anywhere near.
Wow.
Nothing like Hydra.
Amazing.
What a goof.
I also think that it's kind of important to contextualize this in this, like, the fact that nobody takes his arm away from him, I think, really makes this not an issue for me. I mean, like, obviously all violence sucks, right? Like, we can agree that, like, the equivalent of, I mean, the thing that Sam does in this episode of just breaking John Walker's arm is not a good thing to do to a person, yes?
Yes, but this is the MCU.
Well, it's John Walker.
I mean, generally speaking, but like, in in the context of a fight, when you're like fighting with someone and you need to make them not do something with a limb, typically what one does is, you know, I don't know, pin it to a table or like break it. And in this case, his arm's detachable, so it's now on the floor. Like, that's not weird.
It's a very different context. It's an action movie. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I would suggest that, like, the optics of this are not 100% perfect, because there are certain implications to, like, popping off a prosthetic when a dude has a prosthetic, and I don't think that those were necessarily thought through. But it's doing this on the way to making an important point about, like, you know, the Wakandans made this, and this parallels with how, you know, a lot of white America and what people think makes America great was built on the backs of black labor and like this stuff that was stolen from black people. It ties into Isaiah Bradley's whole thing that he talks about. So I think it's kind of this thing where like there's a questionable aspect on the way to an important point, and you know, that's okay.
How nuanced core of you.
Yeah. Thanks. Ooh. I'm very smart and hot.
Speaking of Wakanda, by the way, do you guys want to touch lightly on the Wakandan presence in this episode before we move on?
Sure. I think it's pretty funny and cool how Zemo visibly wants to get shot in the face, and he's disappointed when he doesn't get shot in the face.
Me too.
Yes.
It makes me sad.
Well, like, Zemo wanted to get shot in the face at the end of Civil the Fuck War.
Yeah, I suppose so. He tried to take direct action about that.
Yeah. And then he got taken by Wakandans again.
He's been wanting to get shot in the face for a very long time now.
And yet it's a parallel. You know, instead of being shot in the face, you're taken by Wakandans.
Oh, wow. It's a cycle. Daniel Brühl is one of your favorites, right, Caitlin?
I love Daniel Brühl. I have loved Daniel Brühl since I was studying German in high school many, many years ago. And several times we watched Goodbye Lenin, which is a wonderful...
Was this pre-Civil War?
Oh, no, this was years. This is when he was doing German movies only. This is in German.
Oh, wow.
It is about the fall of the Berlin Wall, and Daniel Brühl is a young kid in East Germany, and he's kind of protesting against the East German regime, but his mum's very, very into it. And... she has a heart attack shortly before the fall of the wall. And then she goes into a coma while everything is, you know, walls coming down, reunifications, all of that. She wakes up and the doctors tell him, if your mother has a shock, she could die. So what he does is he creates East Germany within their apartment. And goes to the degree.
That's amazing.
Which is easy when she's stuck in bed, but when she starts to want to go outside, and it's just like, he's doing these ridiculous things and destroying his relationship with his sister to try and, like, keep his mum alive, because... but then it's also about, you know, being able to move forward or not. But he's wonderful in it, and I have loved him ever since.
Oh my goodness. So you are truly an OG Brühl stan.
Yes, pretty much. Ever since German in year 10.
Yeah. I'm so pleased, because like it's really paying off. This is truly a podcast about liking something when you were a teenager and it paying off for you unexpectedly much, much later.
Yes.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
But yeah, now he's going to go and sit in a hole in the ocean or something, apparently. Which I'm not
a fan of that.
No, neither. I'm not sure how I feel about the, you know, let's just go with incarceration in what feels like a very American style prison, except it's in the middle of the ocean. But
Well, I guess you gotta put him somewhere, right?
Yeah.
In terms of plot,
I do like the fact that the Wakandans get jurisdiction over him and they get to decide what happened to him, because fundamentally they are, I mean, like, Zemo wronged a lot of people, but I think that, you know, blowing up the king is probably...
Yeah, I think that's easily the worst thing he did.
Yeah, by some distance. Like, it carries a lot of narrative weight. Like, that kicks the whole thing with Black Panther into motion, really.
Exactly. I'd say the two worst things he did were blowing up King T'Chaka and, like, hijacking the mind of a brainwashed POW. And the fact that both of those, like, representatives of that, you know, Bucky and the Dora Milaje are the ones who finally bring him in again and, like, decide what to do with him, that strikes me as very fair.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I don't agree with their decision, but whatever.
It is their decision.
Yeah, I guess. It's the limits of the political imagination, and we're always going to run up against that in some form or another, and I feel like this is a pretty minor instance of it.
Yes, considering that the rest of the episode seems to be going, you know, all the way on racism, which is fantastic.
In the context that this is a show that has Madripoor in it.
Oh, yes. The episode, like, it did really interesting thing binding up sort of American exceptionalism and meritocracy and racism and supremacy into all this interconnected thing. And I just, as a system, and, you know, the systems are the problem. Surprise.
Yeah. Damn.
So a lot of it is in this, that Isaiah Bradley and Sam scene, which is just, honestly, I reckon the most powerful scene of the show. Massively pivotal for Sam. But it has, you know, it starts with Sam, you know, kind of admitting that he is an idealist. Like, he understands where he's coming from. He believes in all this stuff. He believes, you know, a hero could make the world better because he believes in Steve Rogers. But Steve Rogers is like, and Captain America is like, the definition of American exceptionalism is like, it's a guy literally dressed as dressed as a flag, and he is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Even if it's Steve Rogers, who is a seriously great guy, that's a bit fucked. And Sam kind of hasn't really had that challenged. That he's been like, oh, Steve is an exception, and Steve is fine.
Yeah.
And therefore, this idea isn't fundamentally broken because it couldn't be if Steve's fine.
Exactly.
But then you get the big thing was Isaiah telling his story and saving his men from the POW camp, which is a literal parallel of Steve saving Bucky. That is exactly the same thing. Yeah, going against orders, one-man mission, save a bunch of POWs, bringing them back. Except Steve got a field commission, a crack team of Howling Commandos, and became a literal superhero, and Isaiah Bradley got locked up and experimented on for 30 years. And the only difference between them is the colour of their skin. Because Isaiah Bradley sounds like he was, you know, as good a bloke as Steve Rogers. And so that challenges to Sam. It's like, okay, maybe it's not like that, you know, this idea that someone can just be better, you know, is still super caught up in all the systems of racism that he knows about, but he kind of has to, I think he has to pretend to himself that he can be better, that he can do something regardless of that.
He says that his approach is that he wanted to go out and make the world better.
He wants to do good,
and in fact, he also says, I think, I used to say, I'm going to show them, he says to Sarah. So the idea that, like, I know you and I were talking about this, where, like, there's this whole idea of the model minority where you can, like, be good enough that people will respect you despite the fact that they're prejudiced against you. And, like, Sam cops to that immediately in this episode. He's just like, I thought that I could earn my way into, you know, like, out of all of this shit. But now I realise that that's not going to solve anything.
And there was a really interesting, like, a two-line bit of their conversation where Isaiah says, you know, no black man, they'll never make a black man Captain America. And you can see in Sam's face, he's just like, no, I will do it. I can do it. I'm stubborn. I'm Steve Rogers. You know.
I'm Steve Rogers.
It is pure Steve Rogers stubbornness. And then Isaiah says, no self-respecting black man would want to be. And even though Sam ends up disagreeing with that, it makes him actually take a step back and question, why does he want to be Captain America? What is he actually trying to do? You know, is going and taking on this mantle of American exceptionalism and a literal symbol of American imperialism, is that the right thing to do? And he decides it is, but he actually thinks about what it means for the first time in this whole series.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, coming back to the thing that you were saying earlier about how Bucky's character arc is very subtle in that he's going to go and do the same thing that he was going to do anyway, but now it's completely different because the things inside him have changed. And, like, the fact that Sam is going to be Captain America the way that he always was going to be, but, like, now that he understands the full weight of that, the whole nature of the situation has changed completely. Even if nobody else knows, he'll know, you know.
And the fact that he's doing it for the right reasons, which I think is kind of a running theme. Like, if you, like, where Carly is, like, you know, take another character, where Carly is most sympathetic is when she's doing it for the right reasons, where she's doing it for other people to protect them and actually putting them first and not so much thinking about, which I think she's actually distanced from because all of those people got arrested.
Yes. Yes.
From her actions and
Yeah, I think where Carly has gotten less sympathetic over this episode and the previous episodes is that she kind of strayed from that. And, I think it does... I'm still not sure at this point whether, like, Sam is going to take the shield or not. I take what you're saying that it... The most likely outcome is what you were saying, that he takes it up, but, like, Bucky going to tell the dude, but what's inside of him has changed. I think he's going to take it up, but what's inside of him has changed. And as such, he will be able to do right by the people that he's serving. And that in that way, he was never going to exactly become John Walker because it's just a completely different context and he's a different person. But I think it results in a situation where, like, he understands this role better clearly than John Walker does, although John Walker in his particular way understands this role perfectly well, as he demonstrated.
I think it's really powerful that when Sam is trying to work out essentially does he want to be Captain America and what sort of Captain America does he want to be, is he goes back to his family, he goes back to the people he grew up with and his community, and, you know, surrounded by other black people who are just living in the normal world.
Yeah. It's what she was saying in the last episode. That shield never represents me. Why should I care? And, like, by going back to the roots, then maybe it can. And, like, I suppose that turns around into, like, perhaps an overly optimistic view of patriotism in general, but, like, it's definitely an interesting angle on the symbol.
Absolutely. You know, the bit where Sam's, like, on the phone with all those people who owe his family money and favors and, like, the people that they've helped over the years, and he says, you know, like, I'm Sam Wilson, I'm the kid of these people. That really hit me really hard, because it wasn't just, like, Sam turning back to his community, but, you know, you realize that, I mean, you know, he says, I'm Sam Wilson, and, like, there's a whole thing to that, because he's a superhero now. And the fact that he introduces himself as the son of his parents, and they were people in their community, like, shifts the context in which he exists so completely. Yeah. And, you know, I loved that. I thought that was amazing. I'm also thinking a lot about the bit right at the beginning of the episode, right before the credits, when Sam has the shield, and the first thing he does as soon as he picks it up is try and wipe the blood off it.
Yeah.
Which is not subtle.
And it does not come off.
But it's such a beautiful shot.
It doesn't come off that easily.
Not fully, no. He's just smearing it around. No, like, he is getting it off, but not, like, as thoroughly as one would hope. You know, it's, like, very slowly being wiped away. And, like, that seems to be very symbolic to me of what he's going to be doing with it from now on. Yes. Because, like you were saying, you know, like, what kind of Captain America is he going to be? Because at the beginning of the show, he doesn't think he can do it because he wants to be Steve. He's, like, living up to an ideal that is ultimately an ideal of white America and of American exceptionalism. And it's, like, it's a thing that he has no part in shaping. He just has to be as good as that person.
Yeah. And it's the thing that he says, that you can't let other people decide who you are, or who you should be, or what role you're trying to fill. And John Walker does this as well. John Walker is just trying to be Steve Rogers. And, like, he's doing an insane job of it, but, you know, that's what he's trying to be.
And meanwhile, Sam is here, like, him taking up the shield in this case is not so much him conforming to it or, like, becoming one with it, but him, like, molding that position to the person that he is and the community he lives in. You know, he's not making a black man Captain America, he's making Captain America a black man, which is a totally different kind of situation. And it's obviously not something that's going to work out immediately, but, like, I appreciate the attempt to try, you know?
And I think he's going in knowing how difficult it's going to be.
Exactly.
Can I pivot to a conspiracy theory?
What is it?
Okay, well, I wanted to bring this up, and I didn't want it to be, like, the headline for the episode, but I have seen this going around, because there is a conspiracy theory, as I will call it, put forward by a YouTuber who goes by the screen name Nando versus Movies. Now, okay, this is going to take a few minutes, so bear with me. I should lead by saying that Nando versus Movies seems like a cool dude, but he practices the kind of media criticism that I don't. Not for nothing that his channel is called Nando versus Movies. The top comment I saw on this video about Falcon and the Winter Soldier is that he's, quote, doing Matt Pat's job for him. So he generally, though not exclusively, treats media as, like, puzzles that needs to be solved and in that way defeated. Like, his other recent Marvel videos include WandaVision ones, like, who is Hayward really? And Hayward, of course, turned out to just be Hayward. And who is Pietro really? As, to be fair, Pietro turned out to be a whole thing. He has a recurring One Small Change series where he tries to, like, solve movies that he thinks are bad, so on and so forth. He did, like, a bunch of these for Rise of Skywalker rather than just do the dull thing and actually rewrite Rise of Skywalker like Kim did.
Hey, read my Rise of Skywalker script.
Read it. Do it, coward. So, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, the approach is trying to solve media rather than read it in the academic sense, because that's how English is taught in a lot of schools. Now, Kim and I have previously engaged in a bit of this. Like, last week we speculated a little bit on who the power broker could be, but we prefer to actually talk about the show.
Oh, yeah, very seriously.
Very seriously. It's the Red Skull.
Definitely.
But yeah, we prefer to actually talk about the show. Now, to be clear, I don't think any of this makes Nando a bad dude. I just mean that while we have similar jobs, Kim and I have a very different approach, and that is why our audience, by the way, is 92% girls.
Woo!
Which, hell yeah, I won.
That's a whole 5 girls.
All the girls.
Hit me up after the show. Having said all that, Nando's latest rinky-dink theory isn't completely insane. Because, and I say this in... conscious of the fact that there's a real risk of looking at any media made during or after 2020 and saying that it's a metaphor for the coronavirus, but this is one of the more sensible takes along those lines. Because one thing that I hadn't noticed about this show until Nando said it is that although Mama Donye dies of tuberculosis, that disease is only referenced by name when we cannot see the character speaking. When they're out of frame or facing away from the camera such that we cannot see their lips move. And that indicates that the choice to make his tuberculosis may have been made through additional dialogue replacement, or ADR.
Mm.
Now, from there, after Nando made that point, he made a few points that I'm pretty sure are incorrect. Like, unless I'm getting mixed up, I believe that he conflates the super soldier serum with the vaccines that the flag smasher stole, and he forgets why exactly Zemo was busted out of jail, and so on and so forth. And also there's, like, an article that's referenced as a source, but the sources for that article are just like, oh, I've heard some whisperings, so, you know, it's probably bullshit. Again, having said all that, I do think it's worth noting that Mama Donye dies of a disease that's named only apparently through ADR, and is that the Flag Smashers are stealing specifically vaccines for refugees that aren't getting them. Asando's video also points to a concept from the Captain America comics called the Mad Bomb, which is a bioweapon that unleashes the disease that induces an insane state, like halfway zombification, similar to the thing from the first Kingsman movie. Now, if the Mad Bomb were to be adopted for the political thriller context of the MCU's Captain America stories, it's easy to imagine that they would just make it a terminal disease.
Yeah.
Further to this point, we talked last episode about the Flag Smasher's ideology, and Kim kind of defended it as being very post-Brexit and speaking to refugee crises, and I, well, apart from talking about Belfast for a long time, I said that their ideology isn't communicated completely clearly. And Nando made a similar point, more harshly than I put it, but he made a similar point, and he said that something could have made their whole deal make more sense. What could have made their deal make more sense is if they were trying to steal and distribute not just generic resources, but one specific scarce resource that the GRC is withholding from refugees, as that could be vaccines for a virus.
I mean, I think it falls into the trap of most things of currently being interpreted as post-COVID, which is, I'm pretty sure they were written and filmed pre-COVID entirely.
They weren't, actually. The filming for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier got... The reason why it was delayed and WandaVision got released first is because they filmed halfway and then COVID struck. And they had to finish the other half under quarantine measures.
See, this is the point that I'm trying to make, that they wrote a story about a pandemic and then COVID happens, so they changed the story in post.
So they couldn't...
That makes more sense. I can... I'm more on board with this theory than most it's secretly COVID theories. Because, you don't want to run...
If that is indeed the case,
you don't want to run a insensitive story about COVID in your story that's meant to be about something else.
Because if it was specifically the Mad Bomb, then that would be that, like, someone, maybe the GRC, was, as a EU-UN type organization, release the virus on purpose, which strongly resembles many real-world COVID conspiracy theories and would be insensitive in the new context.
Yeah.
Oh, extremely. I would say, though, that if it were not, like, a bioweapon kind of situation, like, if the original story was just people are getting sick from a pandemic somehow, and the government is withholding vaccines from people who they don't value, and therefore we're blowing them up, I would be very disappointed to find out that they had that story ready to run during the COVID era and decided not to go with it.
Yeah,
I mean, I can understand why that would be a bit much, but also, like, that's happening.
It is literally the story of 2021. Yes.
Fuck Bill Gates.
Yep.
Something that he's been longing to hear for many, many years.
Oh, boy.
Since we're here, do you want to talk about the Flag Smashers some? They're not even really in this episode, and, like...
Yeah, let's go. You have a thing to say?
Yeah, not a lot. And the thing I have to say about this is I've been really enjoying the Flag Smashers in the past few episodes, and in this episode, I kind of wish they weren't in it, not because anything bad has happened with them, but because I don't think their being around was necessary, and I was so caught up in the whole... Yeah. Bucky and Sam are fixing a boat of it all.
Yeah.
That every time it cut to, like, plot, I was just like, why?
Yeah,
I feel like the best thing about this episode is that it has almost no plot in it, and that they made that choice. And, like, one of the producers calls this, like, the strongest episode of the show. And
it is.
Yeah, it probably is. And, like, I think it's telling that they know that. Like, that just indicates that they knew they were making this choice and they're confident about it, and it's what they, in the production of the show, were enthusiastic about. And I think that's reflected in the product. So I think it would have been even better if they just kind of cut out the last few little Flag Smasher bits. Yeah. Although I understand that, like, in order to kind of push the plot in the direction that it needs to go for episode 5 to end in such a way that episode 6 can start where they wanted to start, then they need to do some things.
Yeah.
But all the same, I think that this episode as, like, a discrete unit could have been better if they weren't, like, cutting to Carly standing around in the abandoned complex and she's like, meh. But also, like, if you cut that bit, then that would take away from Carly's whole deal, because you don't see the emotional context so much, and this show is, has been so good on emotional context otherwise. So, it's tricky.
Yeah. As I feel like what it was is it was, you know, a significant emotional arc step for Sam and Bucky and John Walker, to be honest. The end of Zemo's arc. And then Carly, it was literally just positioning her for the final episode. And yes, it was like positioning her both, you know, physically, you know, she is now in New York and is about to do a thing, but also emotionally. Yeah. So it doesn't abandon the emotional side of the plot, but it is just maneuverings for Carly. Whereas everyone else has huge, substantial stuff in this episode. And I think that's where there's the disconnect. Is it's not even that necessarily Carly's stuff is bad, it's that it's fine, and everything else is really bloody good.
Yes, yes. It's less substantial, and it feels more like practical plotting maneuverings.
Yeah.
But, at least it's not whatever the hell was going on with Sharon.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah, she just popped up.
At least that was only one scene.
Freaking...
Yeah. Like,
but okay, how do we feel about the implication that Sharon is sending Batroc the Leaper to help out Carly and the Flag Smashers? Like, what is happening?
I have no idea.
I mean, it's she's just gotta be the power broker at this point, or at the very least, it's like a very committed red herring. To the point that if they drop it as like a big reveal in the next episode, I'm gonna be like, come on.
I'm so not interested in this. Go away, Sharon.
Their only way to play that reveal interestingly is to have like Sam react to it. That's literally the only interesting thing about it would be Sam reacting to Sharon being the power broker, because the audience knows, and there's not much interesting there for the audience. But there would be something interesting there for seeing how Sam reacts to that. That essentially, what is a betrayal? That I think could be interesting.
Yeah,
but like Sam and Sharon don't even know each other that well. The person that Sharon knew is Steve, and Steve's dead.
Yeah, that's true.
Sharon and Steve didn't know each other that well either.
Yeah,
she's a total non-entity of a person who got done dirty and never got any more character work ever.
F in the chat for Emily Van Camp, who of course is getting fantastic material in this show now. Really getting John Justice.
And to be fair, on like Sam's arc of maybe some people are just assholes, and you know your shiny view of the world is not always right, and Steve was sometimes wrong. He had that turning point in this episode done really well and complexly, and so it feels like doing it, psych, it turns out Sharon is evil or was working against you or whatever it turns out. It just feels like a clumsier version of what he went through in this episode. But, you know.
Okay, I have one theory about how this might work out, interestingly. And that is Sharon being on the side of the Flag Smashers being the thing that turns Sam and or Bucky around on them. Not because Sharon is so important to either of them, but because they're already both so close to just being like, fuck it, I don't care.
Yeah.
Let Carly do whatever she's doing. Yeah. That finding out that one of the allies is just helping her behind the scenes because she agrees with them is maybe going to be the thing that tips them over the edge. And it's just like, well... if Sharon doesn't care, neither do I. Why are we bothering with this?
That could be it.
Yeah.
I'd buy that.
Yeah.
And if it's not that, that's the fic pitch.
Yeah. You're welcome.
which we'll be competing. Which one of us can write it first?
Okay, well, we're not coming up on time, but we're not coming up on time. So, do either of you two have things you urgently want to say?
Do we not need to talk about Walker at all?
Yes, I was going to say, I have something to say about John Walker.
Jesus.
Okay, one, he's an asshole. Two, he's bad at arts and crafts. The thing...
oh, John...
but, so, what I was thinking about through this episode, because, you know, the episode got me thinking about racism, surprise, surprise, is
that,
shocking.
You know, Walker has a black best friend and a black wife, and those are usually in media signifies that someone is not racist. They're obviously yes. not proof, but they are used like that in media. And
yes.
the thing is, we don't ever see John being, like, outwardly racist. He's not, you know, he doesn't say awful things to people. He doesn't specifically go around murdering people of one race, despite, you know, American military, we know he would have.
There's a bit where he very disgracefully yeah. murders a dude, and they do make that dude white.
Yeah.
It would have been it would have been a cheap shot to just cast that character as black to make the point, but they don't do that.
But the thing is
yeah, yes. but
Walker's still not racist, like supremacist. He's as part of that, you know, amalgamation of American exceptionalism and meritocracy and racism yes. and supremacy that I was talking about earlier with Sam having yeah. to grapple with in the episode
yeah.
being about, is he's kind of the proof that it's a system, and even if you're not personally doing anything particularly horrible on that mm-hmm. axis, if mm-hmm. you're contributing to the system, if you're a part of that system, if you're standing up as, like, I am a symbol of American imperialism, which is an inherently racist institution, as this episode's mm-hmm. pretty clear on,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
it doesn't matter that you've got a black best friend.
It does not.
Absolutely.
And I think that was a really interesting yeah. choice, because
yeah,
it's taken, like, this episode has had basically, like, apart from the bank teller, really, not much racism on the personal level.
Yeah.
A lot mm-hmm. more of it has been structural, institutional, systemic.
And I think that's really good. A
really interesting choice, because it's, you know, yeah. that's where the worst of it comes from. And that's what perpetuates Absolutely. Everything.
Because I do hate when stories about racism are just, like, about the personal level and have no grasp of the systemic level. Crash being, yeah. like, the type of this.
yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, John Walker says, as he has done on multiple occasions, I am Captain America. And as he does every time, like, every time he says that, my notes say, yes, you are.
He's not wrong. He is here to save the American way.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, his speech is so good in this, because, yeah. I mean, obviously he is wrong, because he's, like, there's something up with this guy.
Yeah.
But the things that he says are absolutely true. He says, I only ever did what you asked of me, yeah. what you told me to be and trained me to do, and I did it.
Yeah.
I did it well.
Yeah.
You yeah. built me. I yeah. am Captain America.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, yes, he is.
Yeah, and I like, there are other speeches that like, that reminds me of. There's a similar speech at the end of, like, Falling Down, starring with Michael Douglas when he was younger. Even, like, Peter Capaldi's last speech is Malcolm Tucker in the thick of it. It has, like, a similar courtroom scene. Where he says, yeah, you can't lay this shit at my doorstep. So it's in a proud tradition.
Well, this actually reminds me sort of tangentially of something that I wanted to say on one of your previous episodes, because I generally just talk at this podcast in my car.
Great.
Which neither of you would have been able to say, because it's specifically Australian and topical news. So when Walker was talking about what he had to do to get the Medal of Honor,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, not particularly honourable things. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very clear that even he knows that.
Yeah.
Australia has had a scandal breaking news sort of for a while now, but it came to a head last week for some random corruption reasons. Our most decorated war veteran, who has the Victoria Cross for Australia and another medal that means something, his most decorated living war vet, has been highly, highly implicated in a bunch of war crimes.
Oh, dear.
And then what they found last week was he had hidden a USB in a pink lunchbox buried in his backyard, which had images of some of the war crimey things. Like, literally buried the evidence, which is the funniest phrase in a horrifying news story. Yeah.
Personally, I would just break the USB.
Pardon?
Personally, I would just break the USB.
Yeah, you would think. But apparently he wanted the photo of himself at a dress-up party where someone else was dressed up as a Klansman.
Oh, yeah, well, why wouldn't you want that?
Yeah, so oh it God. Was incredibly yikes and horrific. And also not really surprising given, you know, military Australia. We get this. Australia being just as bad as the US on 90% of this stuff, and worse on some things. It was that thing of, you know, your most decorated war hero is you know, directly culpable for war crimes, was a very strong parallel to John Walker.
Of course.
That was just like, oof, this is like,
This is the thing when your show, I think what we're finding here is that this show is about systemic issues. So like week on week, it just strongly resembles something in the news. And that really speaks to its strengths.
Yes.
We're kind of out of time. So I'm going to jump out of that, that like really grim story into, thanks for listening.
let's end on a happy note. Sebastian Stan is pretty when he smiles.
He sure is. A gorgeous fella.
And he does a lot of that in this one.
He does, at last. God. But...
You guys are trying to make me stop talking by just, like, rendering me incapable of speech.
Basic psychological needs. Bucky smile. You can follow me on Twitter at... You can follow me on Twitter at Loafers Writes. You can see my writing at clarity.wordpress.com. You can pledge to my Patreon at Loafers, where you can hear my other podcast, Reading Player One, where I read Player One with my lesbian Canadian married friends, Jesse and Sam, and we make fun of the book. The theme song for this podcast is by me, and the art is by Carousel Unique.
Caitlin, do you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at bossy_Clara, and probably elsewhere on the internet as a bossy control freak, but I don't really know where. It's mostly Twitter at this point. God help us all.
God help us all.
Are there any projects you'd like to plug?
Oh, yeah, duh. yes, I am... I am co-running The Untold Adventures, which is a continuation of Clara Oswald's story after Hellbent. We have some very wonderful writers on it, including both Kim and Loafers. And it's excellent and a mammoth undertaking, and it's seriously exciting. And that can be found at Clara Oswald TUA on Twitter. Or just Google The Untold Adventures, Clara. You'll find it.
TheUntoldAdventures.com. Kim.
You can find me at Kimberly_Chu on Twitter. You can find me on Patreon at patreon.com/ChuKan, where I have uploaded a wonderful essay on Raya and the Last Dragon, if I do say so myself. in which I insult the Southeast Asian-inspired Disney movie, which I'm sure will never come back to bite me in the ass, because that has never done so for anybody that I know on the internet.
Lindsay Ellis, we are relinquishing you of your title as Captain America.
Come on. No, people leave her alone. Leave her alone.
You said it. You have the right to say it.
You can find me on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/ChuKan. I have a new song up based on the works of Julian of Norwich, which will probably make you cry, I hope. That was the point.
That rules, also.
Yeah, and if you'd like to listen to me podcast some more, my other podcast, Scribe to Screen, is still on hiatus, but you can catch the old episodes wherever podcasts are found.
Next week is our exciting final episode. All your questions will be answered. Whose dick do I want to suck? Who wants to suck Bucky's dick? Oh, you can only find out by tuning in.